Okay, good morning again. Happy New Year. Welcome to the January 7th, 2020 Design Review Board meeting. We have six board members in attendance. We did just receive notice that Mr. Weinstein will not be in attendance for today's meeting, leaving us with a board composition of six members. Six members is enough to vote on any application containing a variance, and certainly enough to vote on any application containing design review approval. We'll get started momentarily with some announcements from the city attorney and swearing in of the public.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'd like to start off by reading the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should go downstairs and register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without compensation or reimbursement for your appearance, to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they're communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. Mr. Chair, I'd also like to swear in any members of staff, any members of the public who will be providing testimony today. Please raise your right hands. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth? Thank you.
With that, I'll have a call for the approval of minutes. This is for the after action for the December 13th, 2019 Design Review Board meeting.
I so move.
Is there a second? And all in favor?
Aye.
Approval of the minutes passes. Now I'd like to ask if there's any applicants that would like to request continuance to the next or future board hearing. Seeing none, with that, I will call the first application. This is a continued item, although no presentation was made at the prior hearing. DRB file number DRB 19-0465, 6605 Collins Avenue. This staff recommendation can be found on page 11 of the distributed agenda package to the board. An application has been filed requesting design review approval for the construction of a temporary parking lot, including a variance from the surface material requirements. The plans distributed to the board and at the time of the notice identifies a variance. It's my understanding that the applicant has produced plans that adhere to the staff recommendation in terms of not supporting that variance, that I'm sure Monica will go on the floor. As I stated, the last meeting was December 13th, at which time the applicant requested a continuance to this month in order to revise the plans to be more in alignment with staff's recommendation. We met with the applicant the following week and gave them a deadline to submit revised plans. That was short-timed, but because of the mid-month meeting for the December, we had a shorter turnaround than typical. The applicant was not able to submit the plans by that deadline material, so the staff report reflects the original presentation. They've just distributed new plans that I imagine Monica will go in more depth explaining what they are now requesting.
Good morning, Board. Monica Enten, Burka Rodell, Fernandez and Larkin. Office is at 200 South Biscayne Boulevard, joined today by the architect of record, Jose Gomez of Bellinson and Gomez. We're representing SF Land, also the Sussman brothers, who have owned the property for many, many years. The Sussman brothers also own the Sherry Frontenac, which is directly to the south of this property. This property is sandwiched between the historic Sherry Frontenac and the Doleville Hotel. This is a very small vacant lot that is the only property there that is not historic. And that is why we're here before you today. As James indicated, we were scheduled to go before you, come before you in December, but we saw the staff report and we saw some of the concerns that had been raised in the staff report, mainly the request for the variance of the material. The reason the original variance was requested is because the material actually existed on the site after the demolition of the prior property, and the applicants wanted to retain it instead of having additional damage to the area. However, having seen the staff comment, the applicant has removed that variance, and I have provided you with revised plans showing that there is no longer a variance requested for this property. Some of the other things that staff was requesting or commenting on during the December order, which is also in this order, is that they wanted a concrete banding around the rear, especially around the parking spaces separating the landscaping. This plan also reflects that, so we've complied with that. They've also requested that we revise the landscaping. Additional landscaping has been provided, as you can see from the plans provided by Jose. And I don't have a walking microphone. Oh, there it is. So what Jose has done is he has provided a lot of landscaping in the rear as well as landscaping in the front. The landscaping in the front, we have about 15 feet of landscaping along the south and about 20 feet of landscaping along the north. One of the things that staff did request that we did not feel comfortable doing was to create an architectural wall directly in the front of the property, and that it mimic somehow or the aesthetics of the Doleville. For a couple of reasons, we did not think it appropriate. Number one, our clients do not own the Doleville. They actually own the Sherry Frontenac. The Doleville is currently under litigation with the city. We don't know what the results of that litigation will be. It is for, I believe, for demolition, for neglect. So we don't know what's going to happen with the Doleville. We don't feel it appropriate that we follow the aesthetics of a building not owned by this client and whose livelihood we're unaware of what's going to happen. Number two, this is when we do a parking lot, you have to have a nice big triangle in order to leave the property. It's a visibility triangle, especially going on to Collins. Once we do that visibility triangle, we're left with about 10 and a half to 11 feet of wall on one side, 10 and a half to 11 feet on the other side. If we put a gate or any access path, then that 11 feet on either side would also be broken up. We think it would be it would cause more aesthetic friction with the historic nature of the building surrounding it. Rather, we like having the landscape. We think that the landscape buffer on either side, which exceeds the 15 feet, is actually better. We appeared before the planning board in November for requesting this as a conditional use, and the planning board agreed that although not the best use for the property, it is a temporary use that can service our site as well as the neighborhood. As the owners of the Sherry Frontenac is undergoing numerous renovations with approval from the Historic Preservation Board, and therefore the owners of this land, who also own the Sherry Frontenac, have desired to use this as a temporary parking lot during the construction and the renovations of the Sherry. Thereafter, they want to develop the site differently. This is not the ultimate goal. I don't think anybody on the beach would want the last piece of beachfront land there to be a temporary parking lot. So with that, we ask for your approval of our temporary parking lot without the requirement of the wall and with all the other conditions in your staff report. Thank you.
Does that complete your presentation?
It does. Our architect is here if you have any questions of him.
Thank you. Does anyone else from the public wish to speak at this time? Please come forward. I see no one, so I'm going to close the public portion of this hearing and turn it over to the board for comment.
And before the board deliberates, do any board members have any disclosures on this application? Seeing none.
James, as Monica outlined, does she meet all the requirements with the exception of the wall?
She certainly now adheres to the temporary parking lot design standards, which required the entirety of it be pavers for a porous finish. Because of the substantial depth of this property, they were originally seeking to only provide the pavers in the front portion. They've abandoned that variance request, which would have been to diverge from the material finish, and now is substantially in compliance with staff's recommendation. Staff does have some concern about the, again, this is not an ideal use for an oceanfront site nestled between two historic districts. So staff's concern was predominantly at the rear and the front. The rear to be handled with substantial landscaping to make sure that oceanfront overlay does not have parking, which it does not. But the front, staff was thinking that the urban context of Collins Avenue has a lesser setback than what typical the Sherry Frontenac has. The Deauville's setback without having their survey, let's say 5 feet for a building edge. So staff thought that felt that maybe the applicant had the opportunity to create some form of continuance of that urban edge along Collins Avenue, which would also deter potential wanderers from entering into the parking lot that are not actually using it, in the form of a low wall, which would quell any concerns with safe site distance triangles. They're already proposing landscaping that adheres to those visibility standards. So we feel that a small wall that continues the form of the neighboring properties, at least build to line, doesn't have to follow the architecture of the building. We're just talking about some form of urban edge.
And I apologize, Mr. Chair and Board. There's another condition that we would ask not to have to adhere to. It is condition 1D1C of the order, which removed 6 parking spaces from this lot. I believe that staff was seeking that because of the variance and to push back the parking spaces. So we would ask not to have to remove those 6 parking spaces.
To be certain, you are no longer requesting parking in the overlay in the setback. So.
Correct.
James, how long is temporary?
Well, I think the applicant has indicated they intend to use it for less than 3 years, but the code allows administrative approvals up to a certain time and then planning board approval for an extended time. So I believe it could operate for potentially up to 15 years.
15.
Okay. But after 4 years, we would have to go back to the planning board in order for them to continue the use.
That's true.
That's required yes. Under the code.
After 4 years.
After 4 years, they would have to go back.
I think, Monica, may be helpful to let the board know, since they were not part of the application for the Sherry Frontenac, what the applicant's intention are for the rear of the property and how this site will eventually be utilized?
Correct. So as I indicated, the owners own the Sherry Frontenac, which is directly to the south. The Sherry Frontenac is undergoing substantial renovations in its rear, including the pool deck, renovation of the entire pool deck, as well as balconies along the rear. So the intent is ultimately that these two properties will ultimately connect. Right now, the approval from the planning board would allow the Sherry Frontenac to partially use this parking lot in the rear as staging for the construction. But with fencing approved by staff and all of that, and it would be in the rear, not readily accessible to the front. But ultimately, again, the goal is to use both properties together. Whether designed further as a hotel or residential is unknown at this time, but the goal is to not have the impact on the surrounding neighborhood of the construction crews and the construction staff, while at the same time providing service to the Sherry and its guests by having the parking lot directly there. That's the other thing. The parking lot, although it is open to the public, it will service the guests of the Sherry who now have a parking lot directly next door.
How does the staging work with the proposed improvements for the parking lot in terms of scheduling?
Again, the proposed improvements are going to be done and are required, and we will not change that even through any staging that is done. On the contrary, one of the requirements from the planning board is that if staging is going to occur, we must show staff plans for how the staging is going to occur and how it is going to be screened and separate, and those parking spots are going to be separated. At this time, we don't know, Marsh, how the time frame as to when the staging would be required, because the Sherry's renovations are phased. So we're first doing the rear balconies, then we're doing one portion of the rear deck, and then the second portion. So everything is at a stage level, and that was the goal of having the parking lot next door.
I have a question. Is it at all appropriate to try to incorporate some kind of pedestrian finger towards the beach at this point, since it is sort of a void within this cannon wall?
We contemplated that in the submittal reviews amongst internally, and thought that, again, traversing the site for pedestrians and connection to the beach walk is not something that we felt would be immediately appropriate at this time for the temporary parking lot, and actually may also create some kind of trespass that we may not necessarily desire. And again, the applicant has withdrawn the variance request, so the applicant is just seeking approval for the design review with the two contrary conditions. Staff has no concern with the elimination of the one, identifying the amount of pervious landscape area and the parking spaces to be eliminated. That's been remedied by the revised plans, but does have a different stance on the low wall in the front of the property.
I would say that the landscape has moved forward very nicely with a good mix of native maritime plant material. And I would ask if the applicant would be willing to upsize the three silver buttonwoods on the street from 12-foot tall, 2-inch caliper to 16 or 14 feet tall, 4-inch caliper trees. I would also ask if the applicant would be willing to add uplights to the north and south street tree, as well as the three cinnamon barks along the boardwalk.
The applicant would absolutely consider doing the uplights. With respect to the trees at this point, we don't think it would be appropriate, since this is, again, our temporary parking lot, which will be redesigned when we have the real architecture for the site. And then we would have to be relocating trees at that time. So we feel that at this time, the trees that are being provided would be appropriate for this use, especially since we will be redeveloping the site not so long in the future. But absolutely, yes, to the uplights.
I would also ask that you move some of the trees you're showing on the south side to the north side, which will provide you with a little more flexibility in terms of your staging for the future, not diminishing the quantity, but just shifting. So you've got some gaps on the north side, which is fine. I like the sort of syncopation and the less than rigid layout. But I think if you were to move some of those south side trees north, that would give you a little more flexibility to connect over to the Sherry Frontenac.
Absolutely.
Property.
We would absolutely acquiesce to that.
In lieu of not changing the trees in the front, as Marsh recommended, would you be open to the low wall without having to match the architectural character of the Deauville?
Again, we don't think that the low wall is appropriate. We think that, especially that it's a temporary site, to do that kind of wall, number one, we understand James's position for visibility, that it's low. We still think it has an impact. We also think it would have an impact if we create any pedestrian pass, because now you're looking at 4 feet a break and 4 feet, the 22-foot drive, 4 feet a break, and 4 feet. We think that the aesthetics of that would actually be more impactful negatively impactful than having the landscape. We don't feel that it appropriate. The Sherry Frontenac is set back quite a bit. And also the construction that would be involved with it, with the footings, et cetera, is substantial when you're looking at something that is temporary, and that the requirements of the new requirements of a temporary lot are quite substantial when you're looking at lighting, irrigation, paving. So we would like not to have to do that.
I guess I'm okay, and I see your point with the wall. But if that's your position, and I can agree with that, then I would argue that we're going to get a little bit better street wall with those slightly larger trees, and I would go back to that, saying those three should be larger.
If that's the direction of the board seeks to go, then we'll absolutely do those trees.
That would be my recommendation.
Make a motion,
and I will make a motion. All right, I move to approve whatever this DRB is with the following amendments, friendly amendments. One is that the street trees will be upsized from the specified 212 to 414 or 416 in size and caliper. That landscape uplighting be added as discussed along the eastern trees, for the eastern trees and the north and south street tree, that a number of, or at the applicant's discretion, a number of the trees shown on the south side of the property be relocated to the north side of the property. That's, I believe, the end of the amendments.
Okay, we have a motion to approve on the floor.
Would that include the removal of the condition with respect to removing those six parking spaces and eliminate the requirement of the wall, which is also in the order?
Yes.
Okay.
Did you mention how big you want those trees up in the front?
What's that?
Did you mention the size of the trees you want?
Yes, they're going to be 4-inch caliper, 16-foot.
Okay, sorry.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Application passes 6-0.
Thank you, Board.
Thank you.
Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year.
The next item is DRB file 19-0469, 816 84th Street. This can be found on page 27 of the agenda package. This can be found on page 27 of this of the distributed agenda package. An application has been filed requesting design review approval for the construction of a new residential development to replace an existing one-story residential building, including one or more waivers and a variance to reduce the width of an interior drive for perpendicular parking.
Just add one note regarding the variance. The one variance being requested is for the dimension of the backup space. 22 feet is required, and the applicant is proposing 18 feet. The code does allow for lots that are less than 50 feet in width, a parking dimension of 16 feet, which they're complying with. However, they're requesting to reduce the rear backup space down to 18 feet. And looking at their ground floor plan, they have a trash area and condensing units located behind the drive aisle. And staff believes that those can easily be relocated to another portion of the site. There is an area at the ground level which does not meet the requirements for a parking space adjacent to the middle of the property. They could relocate those elements there and easily comply with the 22 feet required backup space. So for that reason, we are not supportive of the requested variance.
Thank you.
Great. Good morning, board. Members on the board, my name is Ariel Vilela, 6000 Collins Avenue, apartment 530, Miami Beach, Florida, 33140. I am the architect and the applicant for this project. We're planning, as the architect James said, we're planning to design and build a multi-story four units. residential building to replace an existing structure, which is also a multi-family building, built back in 1947. That the building is on the screen. That's on the screen is the existing one-story multi-family building. The site is located in a residential multi-family low density, mostly surrounded by multi-family buildings. Each of the units will have a level of a common area with a kitchen, living room, powder room, and laundry, and then two floors of bedrooms and bathrooms, three bedrooms and two more bathrooms. Although the site is small, we were able to incorporate many of the city's site plan standards, and in some cases, well within the minimum requirements. And you can see in the elevation, we are basically the project is four stories, which is one story less than the maximum allowed. And also the building is like 14 feet below the maximum height. Because the site is small and to provide on-site parking, we need to reduce those 24 feet back space to 18 feet, which was the only way we found to incorporate on-site parking. Even though parking for our project is not required, since the lot is only 50 feet wide, we believe that the on-site parking will be valuable for the development and also for the neighborhood, since the street is crowded already. The ground floor where the parking is located. I believe, sorry, going back to the comment that Michael, even if we relocate the AC units and the trash area, we still have a staircase back there, and we were working on the structural design already, and we are gonna need those walls. I don't know how to point to it, but we will need those walls that are screening the AC units. We will need to transform those screens into actual walls. So we will actually need to reduce the 22 feet to 16 feet back space. The exterior look of the building will be mainly stucco painted in white with some accents in gray, and then some aluminum beams, railing cable, stainless steel cable balustrades. Some of the hardware would be concrete stone steps surrounded by landscape, and the parking surface would be mainly pavers. So in summary, the variance application and the waivers required for the project are related specifically for the need to have on-site parking. If you have any questions, I will be glad to answer them.
Can I just add one note regarding the columns that you mentioned?
I'm gonna go.
So leaving those columns on the ground floor with a dimension of 18 feet to the parking spaces, that would be fine. The code does allow for the drive aisle itself to be 18 feet in depth, but the backup space directly behind the parking space, 22 feet. So keeping those columns and moving the condensing units in the trash area would not result in a variance and would be allowed by the code.
Thank you.
But Michael, what about the stairs that we have behind the two parkings?
What is the clearance below that stair at that point?
I think it's 7 feet.
So that would be fine because that wouldn't be, I mean, a typical car is less than 6 feet. And the clearance is always, you know, you look at clearances for parking garages, they're typically, 6 feet, eight, something like that. So that would not be a violation of the dimensional requirement. So
I think the actual clearance is 70 inches because you have 7-inch risers for all these steps going up to the next level. But I think you could rearrange that if necessary. But does that complete your presentation at this time?
Yes.
Thank you. Does anyone else wish to come forward from the public to speak on this project? I see no one, so I'm going to close the public portion and open up to the board for comment.
Do any board members have any ex parte communications to disclose on this application? Seeing none?
With the exception of the variance, staff is very supportive of the application and has met with their team and had a very good working relationship to bring this product to this point. It's almost a shame that one elevation is a side elevation because it really does have some nice architectural finesse to it. But they've been a very, very amenable through this whole period of meeting with staff and addressing our concerns.
Yeah, it's too bad it's not a corner lot. That would have been great. I want to offer one or two other places where these compactors or the trash and the air conditioning equipment could be located. One was suggested next to the main stair, the stair that leads up to the side elevation. Yeah. I would actually flip the parking space to next to the stair. You might have to reconfigure the steps there in order to still get the clearance you need. And then put the equipment not next to the steps in the space where the car space is now. I'm just offering an alternative if this you're concerned about the unattractiveness that these items may have and noise. The second is that if you look at the first space coming into the garage as you come in and turn left, difficult space to get into to start with, so you may actually have to back into that space because of the turning radius of a car. You might want to look at the space directly opposite that parking space on the upper portion of the drawing in the right-hand corner could probably be used for equipment and not necessarily have to be open, because it's even to back into there, you'd probably prefer to back into a space to the left of there. Anyway, I'm trying to figure out ways that you accomplish both things. You accomplish the remoteness that you want for this equipment and garbage, which I understand, but yet you achieve the majority of the driveway in what's required by code.
Okay. The AC compressors, honestly, I'm not worried about it, them, but because we definitely could put them on the roof. We have concrete roof, so I believe we can just move them up there and basically open all that space, and that would solve the problem for the location. The trash.
You could do an enclosure, so I think you could do the same enclosure in that area by the stairs, so it's not going to be visible. It would be an enclosure, and that does not count as FAR to have an enclosed, trash area.
Can you repeat again the proposed place for the trash area? You propose a location to relocate the trash area?
Well, if you do move the compressors to the roof, that's half the problem.
Okay.
Then you have two trash, and I wonder if they could be configured as one trash. Located possibly adjacent to the stair in the middle, or in the flipping the parking spaces to the right of the stair next to the solid wall,
okay.
Or utilize one of the spaces in the back, possibly towards the front or towards the rear underneath the stairs. And that would give you the majority of it, within code, and we could probably give a variance for a small portion, say one bay.
Yeah, I think if you want to, you know, allow the variance for either the front or the rear portion where the stair is, since you have the clearance basically above where the, below where the trunk would be or above where the trunk would be. So I think that if the variance is limited to, for example, I know there may be some clearance with getting the exact amount where you have the stair going up at the rear, I'd be okay with the board approving the variance limited to, say, the parking space at the back of the property or at the front if you were going to be backing into that, you know, driving in and backing into that space. Although I still think it would be difficult with that 18-foot depth to back into the parking space. But we're also looking at these are going to have to be smaller cars because the overall dimension of the parking space is 16 feet. So I'm sure unless the association is going to have a restriction on the size of vehicles, you may have some that are not quite fitting within that 16-foot requirement.
Yeah, my comments are just to try to have a spirit of the law be adhered to and possibly present tracking diagrams and movement diagrams for how all these spaces could be occupied and accessed and exited.
Hey, I'm not really worried about the, because, you know, the traffic is only four units, so it's pretty much, it's a small scale. I don't believe it's going to be that much traffic. I know it's going to take some maneuvers, probably, to if you have a larger car, but I do believe, obviously, you can't go without much trouble, but yeah.
Well, conceding to the AC equipment's wall and room has reduced the variance impact by half just in that removal of the four condensing units and moving that to the roof. If the plan were to be approved as it is without the CU equipment on the ground floor.
One more option is if you look at the trash area that you have in the center towards the front, the one part of it that actually would be okay because you don't have a parking space opposite that. Mm-hmm. So that would be okay to keep there. Mm-hmm. So you only have to relocate the trash area to the rear. Maybe that could be opposite the trash area that you're keeping or under the stair at the rear.
Okay.
You know, with the board approving the variance only for the backup space for that one parking spot at the rear of the building.
I think that would work, yeah. Yeah.
Actually, with Michael mentioning that eliminates the variance intensity by 3/4 in terms of referring to sheet 14.
I think we could have a flexible enough condition to work with the architect on the exact location of the mechanical equipment and trash room, provided that the variance is only applied or approved for the parking spot at the rear of the building.
I definitely agree. Yeah, we can work together to find the perfect location or the best location we can for the trash area. Definitely, yeah.
I'd like to see more work on the front facade. Your side facade.
Sure. I need to switch files. Just 1 second, please. Sorry, this is the full DRB presentation. It's existing. So basically, this is a this is the main facade.
You go back one.
Yeah.
That's the main facade.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the back. Go back. Yeah.
That's the main facade. We are trying to make it, even though we have a parking, a ground floor parking, we want to make it look as most residential as possible. So as you can see in the facade, it's kind of like it seems to be like a house, typical driveway entrance. And this is mostly what you're gonna see from the front, since the cars are gonna be parked behind the wall on the left of the image.
And you've seen the staff's recommendations of the use of stone.
We believe that the building itself is gonna be mostly stucco, painted in white mainly, with some accents and scale of gray, step stones in the front, in front of the door that you can see in the middle of the elevation, and the driveway. That's the only concrete we're gonna have in all the yards, front, sides, and front. The only concrete we're going to have on the floor is going to be the stairs and the actual driveway. The driveway actually is going to be like pavers.
That facade needs some help. I mean, when you show the other facade is much more successful. Unfortunately, it's not the one we see. This is the one that everybody's going to see.
Yes. It's hard to tell because the street is one way, and you let me see if I would like to see and this is basically what I think you're gonna see as you arrive to the site. Well, this is mostly I think is the angle you're gonna have of the building
until somebody builds next to you.
Mm-hmm.
We are trying to get that lot.
Yeah, I agree with Michael. I think there is a lot of love and thought put into your side facade, and it's successful. And I think maybe it's just creating a little more transparency in the first floor, or just something between the solid void relationship. And there, I think it could be more articulated.
You would like to see like more windows? Or
I don't know. It just lacks the love that this facade has. And that is your main facade. If somebody were to build in this lot that is not you, or even if you build in this lot, in the lot next to it, that what you will see is just that sliver that fronts the street.
It lacks depth. I think one of the nice things about the east facade, I think it's the east facade, is that it has good depth because you have those vertical fins that are proud of the building that's a little bit recessed. So you'll have a sense of shadow. You'll have a sense of depth. You'll have a sense of a visual sense of a little more complexity. And the front is a little, you've got the big move of the frame, the partial frame, but then there's everything else is a little too flat behind it. I think a little more.
I definitely understand the point. We had the room to work on the side because of the setbacks. The front is at its maximum, as at the minimum setback, and then we are doing some intrusions, as you can see on the with the balconies and the big molding. This is the most we could extend to create some kind of sense of movement on the facade. We can definitely add some, decorative, like we did on the side, decorative, beams, or find a way to change materials. I don't think we can do much with the actual volume of the building.
I don't think it's an issue of volume. I think on the facade you're showing, you have a composition on that facade. Once you turn the corner, every piece that's there is different. Every window, every balcony. Mm-hmm. There's no composition there. It's almost like it was sort of all the leftover pieces just wrapped around the corner.
I disagree, but yeah.
Would you be comfortable with those improvements, Mike and Annabelle, at staff level?
If I may suggest, you have some opportunity to work a little bit more on the windows. If you look at your living room, the largest windows face the side and not the front. And if you have buildings built on the sides, most of the light and the views you have from your living rooms will be blocked by the adjacent property. So maybe you could explore having larger windows on the living rooms and the bedrooms on the second floor. That would help you to articulate the facade a little bit more without having to, and improving the use of the spaces inside as well.
Definitely, yes. Yeah, we can work on the on that.
Yeah. I do have landscape comments. Surprise, right? Generally, I think it's a good plan. I would... In just doing a quick summary of the mitigation, it appears that you're going to owe about 30 trees. And you're showing, those are 14s, you're showing about 12 replacement trees. So one of the things I would recommend is, in terms of helping your mitigation, upsizing 10 or so of the Simpson stoppers, because you currently have them pretty small, and they're both on the east and west, and they'll actually help, especially on the west side, they'll help minimize the effect of that facade, which is somewhat plainer than this facade. So if you were to upsize those to the native minimum, which is, I believe, 1.5 inch caliper, 8 feet tall, that's going to help both screen and towards your mitigation. The other thing I would do is on the west facade, make the green buttonwoods larger. You're showing those at 8 feet with a 5 foot spread, which would count now toward your minimum of the native. But I would like to see those much bigger. I think those need to be substantially bigger to help mitigate the mass of the building on that planar facade to the adjacent building.
Okay.
So those should, I would recommend 4 inch caliper, 16 feet in height minimum for those. And then the other thing I would do is, you've got this alternating buttonwood, sable, but mm-hmm. that rhythm doesn't really line up with any part of the building. So if you want to keep that more formal arrangement, I would align it with where the building touches the ground, or I would break that formal arrangement and group those trees a little bit more together in a natural fashion. I think that's pretty clear from the rendering, too. I think there's this nice syncopation to the building that could be offset by a syncopation in the landscape that would complement where you've got solid and void in the building.
I definitely agree. Yep. We can work on that. Yep, sure.
So was there a determination on the variance? Are we able to eliminate it, or we still need it?
No, I think we would modify it to state the variance would be applicable to one parking space, and then add a requirement to the condensing units and trash cans, which are in conflict with the required 22-foot backup space, should be relocated in a manner to be reviewed and approved by staff.
Okay. So I'll make a motion for the approval of that variance.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And then a final Motion is needed, inclusive of the waiver for the clearance height, which staff is supportive of.
I shall move. Including the landscape.
Including all of the conditions enumerated in the landscape conditions, as well as the further refinement of the front facade at staff level review.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Project's approved 6-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
The next item can be found on page 44 of the agenda package. It's DRB file 19-0460. DRB file 16-0083, 1717 Northview Drive. This project, an application has been filed requesting modifications to a previously approved design review approval to the one-story accessory structure in the rear yard, including a variance to reduce the required distance separation between accessory structures and main residence, to reduce the required rear yard open space, and to exceed the maximum area for the second floor of an accessory building. On January 3rd, 2017, the Design Review Board reviewed and approved a application for a new two-story structure inclusive of two design waivers. Portions of that project included design elements in the rear yard, including a pool and an accessory cabana structure. Permitting has commenced, and the applicant has an approved building permit for the construction of that home. Since then, the applicant has sought to revisit the design of the finished first floor of the main residence, increasing that at a height where it was originally approved at BFE plus one. The applicant has amended that those building plans and decided to raise that finished floor to design floor elevation of BFE plus two. That has no design consequence for the main residence and does not affect that principal structure. However, it does affect the elements in the rear yard. When the application was previously submitted for review, the height of the accessory structure was measured from adjusted grade. Since then, amendments to our single-family homes and other common variances have been adopted that have changed the elevation measuring datum from adjusted grade to BFE plus one, so that the design elements that we're seeing recurring in applications that have a design of the rear yard to be somewhat flush with the interior elevation, the architects were able to engineer that better, where the finished floor of a home is proposed at a higher elevation than BFE plus one, there are certain consequences that still are required to step down for that element. But the maximum height is still 12 feet, measured from BFE plus one. In this instance, when they submitted applications for the application for the accessory structure, staff noticed two oversights that were part of the original building permit building permit plans. One was an oversight in the distance separation, which we'd like to see remedied through the approval of that variance, as well as the open space requirement in the rear yard. The proposal now complies with the two-story setback requirements, but does not comply with one of the requirements that once you're over 12 feet in height, the code requires that this element be reviewed as a two-story structure, which means the second floor has to be 50% of the first floor. When you see the drawings, you'll see that there is no second floor. This is an more or less open-air structure that has a a roofed element, but the strict adherence of the code requires that those elements that are over 12 feet be reviewed as a two-story structure, which I'm sure the applicant's presentation will go more of. Due to that open terrace nature of the accessory structure, staff is supportive of that variance request in this instance and wants to emphasize that the proposal does comply with what a two-story accessory structure would be compliant with in terms of setback coordinates.
Good morning. My name is Tracy Slavens. My address is 701 Brickell Avenue, Suite 3000. I am joined today by Ralph Choaf, our architect, Misha Zrati, the owner of the property, and our design team. I want to thank staff for their review of this application and for supporting these requests. As they noted, one of the requests was resulted out of our redesign of the property after we came to DRB the first time in 2017, when we raised the base floor elevation to BFE plus 3 from the BFE plus 1 that was originally reviewed. And also in the time since we've been here, there was an adjustment of the City of Miami Beach grade calculation. It was actually reduced by 6 inches after we had originally been assigned a calculation by the Public Works Department. I have a PowerPoint presentation that I'd like to make a part of the record that'll walk you through each of these variances. As Mr. Murphy noted, the property is on Sunset Island 1. It's a waterfront property. It's zoned RS2. And Mr. Azrati has lived on this property and owned it since 2006. And now he is building his dream home here. This is a rendering of the rear yard, which is where the three variance requests take place. This rendering is updated to match what's shown in our building permit plans. So after approval at DRB, Mr. Azrati proceeded with permitting, and this home is currently under construction. At the time of approval, as we said, we were at BFE plus one, but this being a waterfront lot and the Miami Beach emphasis on resiliency and focus on sea level rise caused him to rethink the base flood elevation and adjusted grade design of the home, and we raised it by 2 feet. That led us to the variance requests that are here today because part of the redesign then triggered our first variance request for the two-story accessory structure, and then staff caught the other two variances that are before you. The first variance is for the two-story accessory structure. It's a pool cabana that's an open-air pavilion. It has a bathroom as part of its design, but primarily it will be an open-air structure with an outdoor kitchen, a seated covered area, and it provides a little bit of shade over the pool. The toilet is essentially the only interior space. This is an elevation plan of the approved cabana. This cabana shows the bath and then the exterior space of the outdoor lounge. The interior height of this cabana structure that was approved was at 8 feet 7 inches. And when we redesigned it to raise it up with the other parts of the pool deck, we decided to add in a ceiling fan, and the interior elevation of the ceiling was also raised. These changes effectively deemed this to be a two-story structure. So now the height of the cabana with the roof structure all in is 16 feet above adjusted grade. This is the same elevation design, but it shows you where the 50% of floor area would have been if this was a full two-story structure. So as you can see, we're well within the height regulations of an accessory structure in a rear yard. Here it is in color. This provides you a little bit of a clearer sketch of what the code would allow based on the height and elevation calculations. And this gives you the context of this structure next to the actual home. Here it is from a rooftop view. You can see that the yellow area indicates, you know, the total massing that would have been allowed by code for this two-story structure. This is a rendering of the rear yard as you would see it if you were walking along the sliding glass doors to the main home. And you can see that the cabana overhangs, creates a shade structure. It's very compatible with the first floor design, and the roof line of it also aligns with the first floor's ceiling elevation. This massing was intended to be compatible, again, with the home design and follow the aesthetic of the roof line. It's always been our intent to meet the code, of course. When we came before you before for our design, we intended to comply with all of the regulations. But this is a waterfront property, and so we felt that it was critical that the pool deck, and in particular the area behind the first floor of rear sliding glass doors, were as resilient as possible within the constructs of the code. We don't think that this variance is going to create any unreasonable or special privilege for the applicant, and we don't create any new impacts to the surrounding area or the adjacent property owners. We're well within the acceptable code limited design of the height of the structure, and we meet the setbacks. Our second variance request is for a variance to allow the spacing of the storage room that's adjacent to the pool cabana to be separated by the main home by 2.5 feet. This was a variance that was identified by staff after we filed this DRB application. As you can see, the storage room is just outside of the rear corner of the house at the northeast corner. It's right between the pool cabana and the main home. Here's a blow-up of it. That 2-foot-6-inch line measurement is from the balcony overhang on the second floor. But all along, we had measured this design from the actual rear wall of the main home. And the distance there is 13 feet 6 inches. We believe that this mistake was made by staff and our team as we went through the design review board process and the permitting process, because there's no support columns hanging down from the balcony. So there's nothing that would indicate a setback if you were looking at a ground floor plan of this building. And so it ended up being an oversight by everyone involved until James caught it when we filed this application. From my construction photo, if you recall, you could see that the foundations for this storage room are already in place. It's intended to be an Ipe wood attractive storage room that's going to hold pool equipment, cushions, and the like. And it blends right in with the backyard and the design of the cabana and that corner of the main home. And here it is from the water view. You can see it's barely perceptible from the public's view, and it's well within, again, the setback areas. So our third variance that we're here for today is also a variance that was caught by staff when we filed this application. As James noted, when we designed for the permit set for this project, we raised the base flood elevation by to freeboard plus 2 feet. I'm sorry, we added freeboard plus 2 feet to BFE plus 3 as our total elevation. And we had a reduction in our City of Miami Beach grade after permitting by 6 inches. So what that ended up doing was affecting our rear yard open space calculation as it applies to the area of water that can be counted towards open space in our pool. And that particularly occurred in our lower pool deck area that is stepped down from the main pool. Again, it was always our intention to comply with code. This math error occurred after the fact. The required rear yard open space is 70%. And with the change to the calculation, which reduces the countable water area down to 50% instead of 100%, our total rear yard open space is now 66.7%. We have the same amount of water area that was designed originally. We have a more resilient design than what had been approved originally. And we feel that this variance is something that doesn't create a deviation or an impact on our surrounding property area owners, on the community, and it doesn't change the view of the home from the waterfront in any way. We know that the open space requirements really apply to stormwater retention and floodplain management, and it's important to note that this home has all completely internal and on-site stormwater retention. When we designed the house, the applicant installed an injection well to capture all of the stormwater drainage throughout the property and fully retain it on site. So in addition to the front, side, and rear yards, all stormwater runoff from the roof of the main house gets collected. It's routed through the house and then sent underground to tie into the injection well. So we create no impacts, and our open space is effectively the same, minus the change in the BFE elevation. So with that, I'll conclude my presentation. I know I'm out of time. We have put a lot of thought into this home. This is supposed to be a forever home for our applicant. And we know that we are asking for three variances, but we believe they're all reasonable. They don't create any new impacts, and they will be something that will make this a better home for the long term.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Does that complete your presentation?
It does, but I believe we have a neighbor here, so if possible, I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
And to not give up the opportunity, does Ralph want to have anything to say at this time?
As a deviation from my usual have something to say, I have nothing else to say. I think she gave a great presentation. I think it basically captures what it's about, but I would like to say something in rebuttal after the neighbors speak.
Okay.
And
you.
I do have letters in support that I'll submit to the city attorney.
Okay, someone would like to come forward to speak on this project?
Oh, and before we hear from the public, do any board members have any ex parte communications to disclose on this file? No, seeing none.
Good morning. My name is Tucker Gibbs. Law office is at 3835 Utopia Court in Coconut Grove. And I'm here today representing Samuel Burston, who owns the property at 1707 Northview Drive, immediately to the east of the applicant's property. My client received notice of the variance request. He has a protected interest in preserving the character of his neighborhood, and that is in keeping development within the parameters of the zoning code. According to Florida courts, adjacent property owners have a recognized and legitimate property interest in the preservation of the character of their neighborhood against unlawful zoning actions taken by local government. And as a neighboring property owner, Mr. Burston has a right to rely on existing zoning conditions as well as a right to the continuation of those conditions. My client objects to the requested variances because they fail to meet all of the requirements for variance approval in Section 118-353 of the Land Development Regulations. The applicant has not met its initial burden to show that it meets each of the eight variance requirements. In particular, the applicant has not shown that it meets the requirement that variances are not the result of actions of the applicant, which is basically a self-created hardship. The measurement of the requirement of a literal enforcement of the land development regulations that would work an unnecessarily undue hardship on the applicant, and the requirement that the variances are the minimum variances that will make possible the reasonable use of the land, building, or structure. According to the Florida Supreme Court, a prerequisite to the granting of these hardship variances is a presence of an exceptional and unique hardship related to the land, such as the shape of the lot, and that's a very important issue here. According to the Third District Court of Appeal, a variance is not justified unless absolutely no reasonable use can be made of the property without the variance. And Florida courts have uniformly found that when determining whether variances are required to allow the reasonable use of property, the applicant must show and the board must find that the applicant cannot use its property as permitted in the zoning code without the requested variances. The variance applicant must show and the board must find that the property is virtually unusable without the variances. Where the project could be reduced in size to satisfy zoning regulations, then the variances should not be granted. Therefore, finding that there is no reasonable use without the variance means that without the variances, the applicant cannot use the property for its zoned use, which is a single-family home. The applicant in his letter of intent of November 12th of 2019 sets out its rationale for meeting these variance requirements. But the applicant fails to explain how this property is virtually unusable unless you grant the requested variances. Nor has the applicant or city staff provided any competent and substantial evidence that the proposed buildings be reduced in size to meet the zoning requirements and avoid the variances. This by itself warrants denial of the variance, but there's more. The record shows that these variances are the result of the applicant's failure to locate the storage closet within the required setback. Add to this the applicant's decision to raise the finished floor elevation at the main building and the accessory structures. Florida courts have determined that a hardship is self-created where the owner is fully aware or should be fully aware of the applicable zoning requirements and still designs a structure that fails to meet those requirements. And that is the case here. Without these variances, the applicant is still entitled to develop the property in conformance with the required setbacks, height, and open space. The claim that these variances are the result of city staff errors do not give rise to a hardship. Florida law does not recognize the failure of an applicant to verify information received from city staff as a hardship. A hardship must relate to the configuration or other physical attribute of the land, and the failure to verify the information provided by staff, however, is a self-created hardship. Finally, any reliance on a practical difficulty standard for these variances is misplaced. The practical difficulty standard is the basis for appeals or variances or modifications made by the Board of Adjustment. Neither the plans and documents presented by the applicant nor the staff report, includes any fact-based evidence of a specific practical difficulty that relates to any definition of or criteria or requirements for a practical difficulty. For these reasons, the reasons I have presented, my client urges you to deny the variance request. Thank you.
Thank you. And that completes your presentation?
That completes my presentation.
Thank you
very
much.
Under the bell.
Now, is there anyone else who wishes to speak before Ralph's rebuttal? Anyone else from the public wish to speak at this time? I see no one, so I turn it over to you, Ralph. Sorry to interrupt, but how much time do you think you need?
Let's do five, so I get two.
Okay, five.
I'm going to talk real fast like the FedEx guy. Okay, so I just want to point out a couple of things. The existing cabana before and the residence that was previously there before it was demolished had a 6 foot, it varied from 6.2 to 6.6 foot setback from the rear. Okay, our new cabana now sets back 19 feet 3 inches, which is substantially more. So then the one that was existing before set back 10 and a half feet from the side. Our cabana sets back 14 feet 6 inches from the side. So if Mr. Burstein is thinking about arguing about a view corridor, no, this actually works to his benefit. That's number one. So based on what Tucker just said, I think that the neighbor is arguing just for the basis of arguing at this point. I don't think there's a basis here for anything else. Now, we are by right. The cabana elevations had not caught up to the elevation codes that were changed. So at the time that this was designed. So, yes, it was too low. The roof would cut right across the windows in the back. Now we are asking for a variance to consider this a two-story structure, although it will never be a two-story structure. It's only a one-story structure, which is 4 feet below what a two-story structure could have been here. So it's actually much lower. I think, is there anything else I should add?
I would like to just put that survey into an image that can provide a good comparison. Here's a photo of the old house on the top with the cool cabana that's shown in the survey. It had a 10.5-foot setback from the east property line, which is the home of Mr. Burstein. And then at the bottom is the design of the new home, which shows a side setback to the nearest structure, which is actually that storage room, of 14.5 feet. So as you can see, the design much improves the relationship between the two properties. And here you can see from a current photo image that, you know, this property was permitted. It went through all of the approval processes. It was deemed to meet code in every way, and building permits were issued for all of the structures that you see. And what's highlighted there in green are the storage room and the cabana foundation structures. As I've demonstrated, there's no impact to the east property line. And this is in part caused by a math error and a revision of the code. But we do meet the code for all potential impacts to our neighbor. We meet setback, we meet open space effectively because we have not changed the way that we've laid out our rear yard, and we meet the height requirements. These structures have been constructed. They have been permitted. So the practical difficulty exists that if these variances are denied, we're going to have to demolish these structures and redesign the rear yard in a way that may not be as compatible or aesthetically pleasing or as interesting as what's been designed by Ralph. We don't think that there is another reasonable use here. We do have a hardship. We feel like we do have exceptional circumstances because it's not often that staff makes these kinds of mistakes. And we feel that what's happened here is not the result of our actions. So with that, we do ask you to consider our requests and approve them.
I got a minute 20. So I just want to add to that. I'm just going to tackle the cabana issue right now. If we're designing a brand new home on this property, and we were to come in front of the board here and say, okay, we would like to, and which has been done many, many, many times in the past, we would like this to be considered a two-story structure, but we're only going to design one story, and we're 4 feet below what a two-story structure could be. That would be a very reasonable request, which the DRB has granted in the past favorably. So you got to think of it that way as far as the cabana is concerned. So hardships aside, I think that's the way you should look at it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? If not, I'm going to close the public portion of this meeting and turn it over to the board for comment. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to add one thing in response to a comment that Mr. Gibbs raised during the public hearing. It's our position that the practical difficulties standard applies to the DRB and HPB just as it does to the BOA. Mr. Gibbs argued that it only applies to the BOA, to the Board of Adjustment, but our position is it applies to all the boards.
Thank you.
Why are we seeing this now?
When the owner decided to raise the house from BFE plus one to BFE plus three, it changed the level of the deck and the cabana and everything else.
We see it when that decision was made?
That decision was made, it must have been months and months ago, maybe 8 months ago.
That wasn't according to the code?
It was according.
That's a unilateral decision?
By right.
That doesn't need to be reviewed by the board?
No, it doesn't need to because by right, at one time it needed to be reviewed by the board. And then.
Can I ask the staff lawyer about that?
Are you asking to the extent that the variance, because the variance obviously requires review by the board. So if it was a change requiring a variance,
Variance is caused by changing the elevation of the house?
The variance is caused by many things. The reason why it's before the board is because there's been a permit revision as well as discussion with the applicant to achieve what this homeowner wants for their open-air structure in the rear. And in discussion and why this was originally scheduled for the
November
hearing, if you recall, why would you? But it was advertised as a different variance because it was going for a height variance for the accessory structure. After the applicant went back with staff's advisement, as well as with the change to the code amending the measurement point for accessory structures, the applicant decided to submit what the owner truly wanted, which was this height, the roof element to be flush with the second floor, which required it to exceed what our charter limits height variances to be capped at 3 feet, which is why it is being processed as that second, as the two-story element, even though it complies with the increased setback requirements for two-story structures, but it gets caught up with that portion of the code that shouldn't really apply to this element, but does, the 50% second floor to first floor. But yes, the raising of the interior home doesn't exactly result in why this is before the board. It is one of the reasons, along with the design choices by the owner.
Mike, if I can add a little bit to that. It used to be a time that used to, as you know, you've been on the DRB a long time. It used to be a time that you have to come before the DRB in order to get your residence waived up from plus one to plus five. That was changed, that now you can go up to plus five by right. So when the owner found this out, he was concerned about resiliency here, so he went, instead of plus five, he just went to plus three instead of plus one, which is 2 feet over the plus one. When that happened, it raised the pool deck. Now, back in the day, you used to have to measure the top of the cabana from average grade. Now, that substantially made the cabana too low and for really practical use in a house like this. So that's why we came before you, in order to consider this a two-story structure. They're changing the code, hopefully, now to make it more compliant or more level with the existing height of the residence, but the reason that we're before you is we have satisfied, if this was a two-story structure, we have satisfied all the setbacks required for a two-story structure cabana, which would have been a legal cabana. We are only going to go one story, and we're only going to go 4 feet below that, and it's been brought before the board in the past, and the board has approved that. And it's just a function of one code versus another code trying to match.
And James, may I ask, we were shown a diagram that had a yellow rectangle sitting up to the height of 50% coverage of the area below that went up to the maximum height. If they were to build that volume, would it, the variance go away?
That's correct. I was actually going to direct the board to that because I think that's a very illustrative graphic to show exactly A, what the applicant is seeking in relation to the strict adherence to the regulation. That yellow structure showing 50% of what the floor plate would be totally compliant with the code in that variance request out of the three, and would have the exact same visual impact on that abutting property.
Yeah, so one could make the case that if they have to do that in order to get rid of the variance, that's kind of a hardship, in my opinion.
I'm sorry, can I interject? But I also, they would have to lower the other half of the cabana, because only 50% of the second floor, of only 50% of the area of the ground floor can be the second floor. So they could raise half of it, but the other half they'll have to lower to comply with the current requirements, correct?
Well, no. The interior space, yes. But if you think of a two-story structure, 20 feet, that is featureless along that interior property line, it would have no architectural depiction on what's a floor or not to the abutting property. It could be a featureless wall that's 20 feet. Interior, the second floor may be at 12 feet, and the second floor could be at the ceiling height of 20. But visually impacting the neighboring, visually impacting a property, there's no impact. If a 20-foot high wall can be approved, measured from BFE plus one, and this or any application is presenting a 16-foot height wall, it complies with the setback requirements of that.
Yes, but you're talking only on that particular wall.
I'm only talking about the impacting abutting property.
Okay.
I have a slide that we can go back to that kind of demonstrates that, if that will help. Because I think when you look at the elevation plan with the massing on top, you can see that our bathroom height was actually designed with a crawl space. So we attempted to meet this second story FAR, but it's the roof overhang that would, in a two-story structure with that 50%, maybe be the height of a balcony wall. So it would be open above. You would walk out there. You would effectively have the same height on the interior side of the pool.
What is that red line showing?
That is where the first floor ceiling would be under
the code,
the 12 feet.
Would need to be with your raised floor.
Correct. So comparing
that 8 feet?
Here you see.
Is that 8 feet?
That's 12 feet.
No, 8 feet above the slab.
8'7", you mean? I don't know. That shows where it would be 12 feet above average grade, as it used to be measured.
That is adjusted grade plus 12 feet. That'd be allowable height. So there's 4.5 feet in the podium.
From the patio floor.
From the patio floor to below the steps.
Upstretched arms at there's the red seven, line.
Correct. 7'8", where the guy with the upstretched arm is.
And
by the way,
if on variance number 3, which is the, I think it's the lower water feature, if that was reduced in size, would that eliminate that variance?
Yes. And they could modify very slightly their proposed pool, which is nearing completion, but that could be amended to comply with 3% more.
And on variance number 2, if that storage space was moved over adjacent to where the bathroom is underneath the roof, that would eliminate that variance.
Yes.
It would, but it would be extremely expensive. It's been built. It was permitted. We operated under our belief that we complied with code when we built that structure and when we dug the pool and it's set its foundations and put in the in the water system and everything else, the lighting, the electric. It's built.
Is it built to full height already?
Yes.
The storage?
Yeah, you could see it actually in that picture.
That is the full height.
That's full
missing
height.
Just the roof slab.
Correct. And the pool, you can see, is designed and built.
I find the applicant's presentation persuasive that there is a practical hardship warranting the grant of a variance, and as well as the recommendation of staff. And I'm not persuaded by Mr. Gibbs' presentation.
I would like to agree because I don't think there's any malice or bad intention directly reflective of them trying to get something across without actually having tried to flesh it out ahead of time. And the zoning rules are as a tumbleweed, you know, you change one thing and it starts to change the next two or three things. So I can understand it's like delay in us hearing this. But again, it could have been 2 or 3 months ago before maybe more concrete was poured.
Mr. Chair, if I may, one of the interesting things about the change to the code that's happened since we had our first approval is the measurement of the accessory structure was a change from adjusted grade to BFE plus 1, but the home itself and waterfront properties are encouraged to have up to BFE plus 5, and the rear yard for a waterfront home can be up to BFE plus 4. So now you have this inconsistency in the code anyway that your accessory structure actually should be lower than your rear yard. It's sort of a patchwork that doesn't always stay consistent.
I just got to add something. I'm actually quite honored by something that I was asked to do is review with staff the new single family ordinance that's being proposed, because I've been so involved in this, and they're asking opinions of a couple of architects and a couple of other people, and I got to tell you, I'm really honored that I was asked to do this. So I'm going to be participating in that.
So I move to approve the application with variances.
Nick, is it okay if we bundle all three variances? They're all pertaining to the same structure.
That's fine, unless there is a member who is supportive of one and not another, and in which case we should take them separately.
So the motion is for all three. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Annabelle before she sneezes. All in favor of approval of the variances, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Variances passed 5-1, noting Mr. Steffens is the lone opposition.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next items we'll be calling up
are the following files. Thanks, Michael. DRB file 19-0472, DRB file 19-0473, DRB file 19-0475, DRB 19-0476, DRB 19-0477, and DRB 19-0478. For those members in the audience that I know are here, as well as I forwarded to the board some members' emails that we've received that are opposing some of the proposed locations, what we're doing today right now is we're calling the following applications up to be heard because it's the same applicant. And throughout the city, there's different poles that are being proposed in our city. We're going to review each one for the site-specific location, and at which point, after the applicant makes their presentation, the chairperson will open it up for concerns from the public, at which point, if you have any concerns about that specific case file, you can come up, say your name, address, and express to the board what your specific concern is, and then we'll close it to the public and open it up for board discussion. With that said, I urge the board to turn to page 60 in the distributed application agenda package, and what we have here is the following citywide distributed antenna system applications. Applications have been filed requesting design review approval for the installation of a stealth antenna distributed node within the public right-of-way at the following approximate locations outside of historic districts. DRB 19-0472 is proposed at 1226 12th Street. DRB 19-0473 is proposed at 601 West Avenue. DRB 19-0475 is proposed at 1236 13th Street. DRB 19-0476 is proposed at 1220 Lincoln, 1230 14th Court. DRB file 19-0477 is located at 1220 Lincoln Road. And DRB 19-0478, 1343 Lincoln Road. For the best of our abilities, all of the locations are approximate coordinates based within city right-of-ways. None of the following addresses land on private properties, although they may be proximate. In this application, all 6 of the proposals are the typology that this board typically sees and approves with little to no discussion. And typically has full support. It's the one-for-one replacement where the applicant is looking for an existing vertical cobra head lighting element within the city, choosing to remove it, replace it with their integrated distributed antenna system for their radio frequencies, and then attach a integrated cobra head lighting system. So from a visual standpoint, aside from the pole being slightly different width and heights, there's minimal impact to the properties because this is replacing an existing apparatus and replacing it in kind with the same lighting fixture. So again, in all of these applications, the applicant is proposing the one-for-one replacement. Staff is supportive of all the applications with the standard conditions. And with that, I'll let the applicant make their presentation. For the record, just for the board, this is not the applicant that we typically see before the board that has much experience. No offense.
Okay.
with the procedure or the presentation or how this is run, but right. Certainly we welcome you to this board.
Thanks, James.
Welcome. Just for clarification, she'll present each individual, and then we'll open it to a public.
I was just going to ask that.
I think that's what we've done in the past,
yeah,
and we'd be best.
It all.
That's right.
And any rebuttal that's necessary, we'll then close you to the public.
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
I have a separate question. The people we saw before, I guess it was Crown and Castle.
That's one of the applicants we've seen before.
Are these all separate systems, or are these all part of one system?
They are separate systems or separate carriers for the same goal, which is
to have the network of a certain level of EF frequency.
But we've had applications from the networks themselves. We've had applications from companies like Crown Castle that lay the infrastructure and then basically rent their space out to individual networks on each distributed antenna system. So, the board's purview does not extend over the specifics of the network, but the applicant may have a response as to whether this network would.
But my question is sort of, so we might be seeing these 100 feet away from somebody else's ones. So there could be multiples of these coming into all the same neighborhoods. And
that's a very astute observation. Unfortunately, the state statute limits our authority as to controlling the proliferation of these facilities so long as they meet sort of a minimum set of requirements. But you still have your authority to apply your design review criteria to these applications.
And will the physical elements be the same?
I'm going to show you a photo of what we're proposing so you could see.
Okay. Do you know what's been already?
So before we get started on the applicant's presentation, by and large, the applications that have come before this board, the poles that have been installed, be it by Crown Castle or other, that have gotten their approval from this board, are by and large look the same. You may have seen driving to the hearing today or throughout the city, seen other poles that look different than what this board may have seen that you know well is outside of historic districts and would be this board's review. That those have not expressly been approved by this board. But the ones that we have processed have the same aesthetic, more or less, considering that there's two different manufacturers. You know, it's a simple structure. It's a pole with an integrated lighting, a cobra head lighting. The ventilation system for the fans and things may be different, but by and large, they're relatively the same.
Right.
The question, if we have approved some, like the last meeting, another antenna, like a block away, let's say, from one of the being presented today, would it be showing these presentations, or because they're not built, you don't see them yet?
No, again, as Nick mentioned, the city's telecommunication ordinance did have requirements for spacing separation. Since that adoption, the state legislation has superseded that. So now, where the waiving of distance separation would have been before this board when they're a block from one another, now that is no longer for review and would not be brought to our attention. I would be able to answer, you know, because I've processed all of these applications with staff, we know by and large where there's others approved, but for the most part, it's almost kind of a land grab in the sense of a street light.
But if we are allowed to decide on the design aspect of it and the uncluttering of sidewalks so far and so on, if there are two antennas very close to each other from a static point of view, it could look cluttering. So it's not necessarily going over the minimum distance between them, but looking from a street design point of view.
Certainly if there was one within the same block, it would be brought to your attention in the staff analysis.
Can we ask that to be one of the requirements for their applications, to show adjacent installations or proposed installations?
That if the proposed, to show any approved DOS nodes within the 375 radius, we could begin to ask applicants to propose that. So within the radius map, the app will burden the applicant to propose the locations of any approved.
Okay. Yeah, this will be I'm just going to run through this. Basically, I'm going to go through the six that we propose. The first one is DRB 190472, 1226 12th Street. If they could put up an aerial photo, you could see where it's going to be located at. They can show. I brought in some visuals. I think it's called DRB 190472, which is 335H. It's the aerial photo. Oh, there we go. So you can see exactly where it's going to be. There's an existing pole there right now. We are proposing to replace it with a stealth pole, and I am going to show you photos of what it looks like. It's going to look like the ones that are already in the city right now. Everything will be enclosed within the pole. And there will be no ground equipment. It'll just be a basic light replacement. If we can pull up the before after the photo sim, that's exhibit number six. This will show you what is there right now and then what we're going to propose. There we go. So right now you could see there's a light fixture there. So we're going to take that out. And we're going to put in the stealth pole with the light fixture in the exact same space. So that's really what we're proposing on this one.
Does that complete your presentation on this one?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone from the public wish to speak at this time concerning this one application? I see no one, so move on to the next.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. The next one. This is a similar proposal. Basically, if you can pull up number five, the aerial photo, you could see we're proposing this on West Avenue. Well, it's 601 West Avenue is the address, but it's approximate. The aerial photo will show you exactly where it is. Number five, aerial photo. Okay, great. This is also going to be a similar project. We're going to take that pole out, and we're going to put in the DAS system. At this exact location. If you could pull up number six, a before and after photo sim for this one, L71H. Okay, so this light fixture is a little different, but we are replacing it at the exact same location. We are going to put a light head on there, a light arm on there, and it'll be all stealth and everything interior, just like the last one. So if you have any questions on this one.
Cheryl, we made a note in our staff analysis. Yeah. If you see the existing armature has a more decorative element.
Yes, I saw that.
And is also a black color. Our staff recommendation is recommending that this be also black and that you install a decorative armature to mimic the one that's in this area.
And we can do that. We can, aesthetically, we can change anything. That's fine.
That's good to hear. Anyone from the public wish to speak concerning this one application? Please come forward.
I live at 650 West Avenue, and I have some questions. My name is W.F. Burnside. I'm on the southeast corner, right above that, where that is going in. A couple of questions. What is a stealth antenna? What does that emit something? What is it? Because that's just some words.
You want me to explain that? Okay. So basically, this is a 5G build for the carrier. There's various carriers I know you've heard and you've seen on TV and everywhere else about 5G. The move from 4G to 5G, there's 3G, 4G, 5G, that's what they do. Basically, 5G is a booster. It's a speed upgrade. Mm-hmm. So what it is that you have cell towers everywhere. And 5G is small cell because it's just it's a different kind of an equipment build. But basically, 4G is the towers that you see everywhere, and then 5G is speeding up the data of all the devices. So
does it emit anything?
Nothing different from before. Nothing has changed. Well, I will explain that.
That's not the answer.
Yeah, I know. I understand. So basically, nobody's really – you can go to the FCC website because it's all regulated by the FCC, and they can give you details of what 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G emits and all the details of what it does and all the studies that have shown. But I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to tell you, you know, exactly
Cheryl,
the consequences.
Yes, it emits radio frequencies.
That's
the answer.
Radio frequencies.
Yes.
Okay.
The whole purpose of these antennas is to create a network
okay.
of the same continuous radio frequency.
Right.
And why was it determined to go there? I mean, what was the decision to put it there?
Well, so the network has spaces where there's connections and where it works perfectly when you're driving around or wherever you're going. Sometimes your phone drops a call or sometimes your data doesn't work or your internet doesn't work. So there's RF engineers that go over this data on a daily basis and they come up with dead zones. And people call in and they report to their companies places where their phone doesn't work. So for instance, on West Avenue, that could be an area where someone's trying to Google or do email or do anything and they're not getting the speed that you would get a block away. So they come up with search rings, and then people like Rich and I, we work the search rings to go and find locations where we could fill these gaps of service. So it's really service gaps. So that's how these sites are determined. So we had a ring on West Avenue where we were looking to replace a pole so we can put a small cell to give the 5G boost, which is the goal, for the network's next build over the next 5 years.
You know, my concern was that, my wife, my granddaughter, if it possibly devalue my property just based on, what it may be emitting. So that was my concern. I don't know if anybody else has that concern. I don't know if anybody else has this across the street from their house where they're living. You know, would you have a concern that they're going to put a pole up across the street where you sit every day that is going to be emitting some sort of radio waves and what that would do maybe to your health, maybe to your property value, or is this just something willy-nilly that they can decide to put it up? They could put it up out on the bridge, over the water. Why choose that? So that's my concern. And I'm happy to be able to say it here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public wish to speak concerning this one application?
Can he say something too? He works with me.
Yeah. Sorry. My name is Richard Barnes. I work at a 1700 Banks Road in Margate.
I'm sorry. Are you also registered as a lobbyist,
no.
Or he would need to be registered as a lobbyist?
Oh, okay. That's okay. Yeah. It's fine.
Unless the board had specific questions for you or him.
If no one else wishes to speak, we'll move on to the next application.
All right, where were we? The next one's DRB 190475, located 1236 13th Street. This one, if we can pull up slide number 6, we can see what it looks like now and what we're proposing here. Okay, so this one, I don't think staff had any changes on the light on this one from what I saw. We're replacing, again, an existing light pole with a small cell light pole.
Right. Cheryl, for clarification again,
yeah.
you're going to take that existing street light and swap it out and put one, a new one with the integrated lighting. Just for clarity, your drawing C1 shows new concrete freestanding pole. That's not accurate. You're proposing the new pole to swap out the existing light head. Correct?
Right.
Thank
right.
because the picture is not, the photographs are not correct either. It shows the point a different place. The existing light fixture is to the right of the walkway into the house, and the others on the other side. So.
Yeah, I see that. Okay.
The intent is that this is in the exact location, right?
Right, it's a few feet down. I think this was because of the power route. Was that because of the power? Yeah, we had a, that's right. This one we moved over because of the, we have to connect to a power. So this one we moved. Yeah, and we can't, right.
You
so
can stay at the existing location.
Yeah, we
that's
can stay at the existing.
Prefer.
We don't have to move it. It was a power issue when they did that, when we thought about the construction of it. We can go back and keep it exactly where it is. We don't have to move it.
Yeah, and I think to keep DOT out of
that's
our
fine.
There, too, would be good.
The what? I'm sorry?
Moving streetlights. Have DOT reviewing it as well. That would be good. Put
yeah,
it back to where it is.
Yeah. We have a survey. We have everything. We go through all that before we go to permitting or anything. But this one is the same. Yeah.
For the record, I did speak with someone in the beginning of the meeting for this specific item. Wanted clarification. I explained to him, walked him through the plans, that it's proposed the existing removal of the existing light head and the installation of a new pole with the cobra head lighting, and he was satisfied with that answer.
Does anyone else wish to speak on this application at this time? Come forward. If not, we'll move on to the next one.
Okay. DRB 190476, and I'll show you the slide on this one, the photo sim on this one, number 6. You could see the before and after photo.
I have a small question, but it probably applies to every application. Is if you look at the current streetlight pole has affixed to it parking regulations. How are they going to deal with that in the future with your pole?
The parking regulations?
You see a little parking sign, no parking from that point onward because of the curb cut?
Mm-hmm. We have a standard condition, Jim, that identifies that any existing light or signage fixture attached to the one-for-one be replaced by the DASNode applicant in kind on the pole.
Yeah, we could put a sign on there.
And that's inclusive of armature to accommodate city events and other events with the light pole banners.
We could do any to the poles that we're proposing could be any color, any style. We chose these because this is what's ready in the city, and so we knew that they wanted to be stealth and all the equipment within, but we have many different types that we could do, so. That's really it for this one.
Okay. Is anyone else from the public wish to speak concerning this application? If not, we'll close it and move on to the next one.
Okay, the next one's DRB 190477. Can we see slide number 6 on this one? Okay, this is the one on Lincoln Road near the movie theater. This should be in the exact same location. It looks like it is, right? Light pole, and we are doing an exact replacement.
This is one where we have approved another applicant across the street.
Mm. Right. Further up the block towards the bay.
If the intent of those antennas is to minimize the black holes or the lack of
the gaps,
why do we need two so close to each other? Because the different carriers use different antennas?
Yes.
Anyone in the public wishes to speak on this specific application? Okay.
Thank you. Moving on to the last application.
Okay, so the last one is DRB 190478. That one is on located 1343 Lincoln Road approximately. And this one, you can pull the slide number 6 up for this one as well, please.
Okay.
And this is, again, a swap out of a light pole. Same thing.
So one-to-one again. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak concerning this application? Please come forward.
My name is Blaine Tucker, and I live at 1345 Lincoln Road, number 403. I don't understand the term swap out. Is there a 4G pole there now, and you're just going to put a 5G?
No,
or is it just an existing light pole?
So 4G is not small cell. 4G is all the towers that you see everywhere. Those big, the big towers are when you see on roofs, you see antennas. Those are the 4G, 3G part of that whole build.
So you're putting something in that doesn't exist right now. You're putting a...
So it's going to house a small antenna.
I know, but is there a light, just a light there now, but you're going to put something in where there's currently only a light? Yes. Okay. Can I have a minute or two? I've gone on the internet, and the problem I have is that all the industry studies say nothing to see here, no problems. You know, if you're 3 feet away, you're okay, and it only broadcasts up and this, that, and the other. But when I go into other studies, it says there's a major problem. It says that it causes headaches, memory loss, cardio stress, low sperm count, birth defects, and cancer. These towers emit microwaves. I live on the fourth floor. You're recommending that this be put outside my bedroom. And I use my microwave in the kitchen, but it's not in my bedroom 24 hours a day running. Okay. My wife is a survivor of cancer, and we went through quite a bit. And to put something outside our bedroom that could increase her risk of having a recurrence, obviously, I think all of you can get my concern here. Let me read you something about what the FCC says. There are no FCC regulations for chronic public exposure to non-ionizing microwave radiation. The FCC puts it off on the FDA and other people. So there are all kinds of publications that say this, this, and this, and what's safe and what's not safe. And I guess my recommendation is, I don't know any level that's safe, and it really concerns us. And when we spoke earlier, you mentioned you might be able to move it. And on a, you know, it just extremely concerns me that something emitting radiation is going to be put in. It's not replacing something, it's replacing a light bulb. You're not putting in a stronger light bulb. You're putting in something that emits microwave radiation. And there are studies. You know, you can go look at the Bioinitiative 2007 report. I've looked, obviously, I've been on the internet for a minute or two, so it's extremely concerning to me. And I guess our request is that if it's possible to move it away from our building. Now, I feel funny saying put it in front of your building instead of mine. But I do have concerns that right outside my bedroom window, with my wife being a cancer survivor, that you're going to put something like this in. And it's extremely concerning to me. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to speak? Please come forward.
Jim, I had brought, as we received emails in concern and opposition of the location, I emailed the applicant to let them know, and also, you know, just advise them that in previous applicants, typically an alternate location when opposition from residents are found is immediately sought and continued at the hearing to a later, to a future date, so that they can appease those residents.
Yeah, we've already investigated. I did get the feedback from you guys, and we didn't ignore that at all. We did. We've been working on that since we found out last week, and we've been investigating alternate locations. The reason why we choose certain locations is because we have to connect to power, and we want to do the minimal amount of trenching and distance to get to power. So we are working on that as we speak, because we know. But go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Mona Brewer, and I am also a resident of 1345 Lincoln Road. Of course, my main concern is health concern, and also I think this radiation should not be in the area at all. I mean, not because it is next to my building I am concerned, it's the whole area. I mean, West Avenue is not very far from us, and the other location is not very far, and there are people living there too. So I think this project is not to be done in a residential area at all. And again, I would like to see the photos again of the light pole that is existing now and the light pole that they are gonna, applicant is suggesting to replace that one, because I think they are not the same. May I see the photos?
Can you pull up slide number 6 on any of them?
They're not exactly the same, though. That's accurate. Yeah.
They are not the same.
They're not the same.
I would like to see them and point out to you something that is not correct here. If we can bring it a little bit, you know, make it bigger, because I am half blind. You can see that the pole existing is light and short. Yes. The light that the applicant is proposing to replace is not short. It is higher on the back of the light, which means it can radiate a lot more, you know, higher, you know, elevation.
The armature has nothing to do with the radiation.
Okay, thank you for saying that.
It may have different consequences in terms of the directionality of the light spillage, and that's duly noted. But the actual frequencies
radiation
emitted from the intervention is from the vertical element.
Okay. My other point and my last point is that applicant is saying that, oh, it is existing already. There are, you know, 4Gs and 3Gs and whatever it is. We are only going to make it a little bit higher to 5Gs. Well, if wrong is existing already, it doesn't make it right. If radiation is existing already and we are only going to elevate it a little bit, that doesn't make it right. Radiation is totally not acceptable. And I am not going to have my health, my grandson's health, my children's health, you know, in jeopardy because of some TV, whatever it is, the project. Thank you very much for your listening to me. I am not an expert. I am just a grandmother who is very concerned about the health of my grandchildren.
Thank you.
Thank you for sending the email,
and thank you for coming today and speaking your mind.
And does anyone else wish to speak, please?
Good morning. My name is Eulalia Toro. I live at 1345 Lincoln Road, 902. My parents also live there. My father is here present, and so are my neighbors. We are concerned. I don't deal with statistics. I don't deal with aesthetics or numbers or the way a pole looks like or the color, which is what I had over here. I do deal with the concern of the health that I found out by looking it up and with the help of my brother. And I do not want the poles there at all. It's possible, not in your home, or even yours, or you gentlemen, which I don't know. I don't know you, but I don't want that for you either. Statistics or whatever reports are there in the internet, and you can look it up. In a city, in a town called Encinitas, California, people were getting cancer due to the radiation of the dust. And they had to stop it. Israel banned the dust. It was banned. They're not using it anymore, and they are not allowed more to be put in place. If they did it, why can't we? Something wrong is there, and they were concerned, and they took action. I'm asking you to follow them as well. There should be other alternative, but radiation is not the solution to the problem, for sure. Thank you very much, and please take into account our concerns. It's your health as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And anyone else wish to come forward? I see no one, so I'm going to close the public portion of this hearing and turn it over to the board for comment.
I'd just like to make one brief comment, Mr. Chair, and obviously I've advised the board of this before, but just because it's an issue that's been raised by many members of the public, the Federal Telecommunications Act expressly preempts local and state governments from taking into account, and I'll quote, no local government may regulate the placement, construction, and modification of personal wireless service facilities on the basis of the environmental effects of radio frequency emissions to the extent that such facilities comply with the Commission's regulations concerning such emissions. So obviously, you're free, and you know this. You've seen, you know, tons of these applications. You're free to continue to apply the design review criteria in the code and to ensure that there are no conflicts between the proposed facilities and the proposed sites. But under federal law, you cannot take into account the environmental effects of RF emissions.
Thank you, Nick. I'd like to have a motion concerning the first five applications which we have reviewed today. Can I come back to the sixth?
Can I just say something before that? I was just going to suggest, since I understand that our role here is more to opine on the static views of those antennas distributed in the city, but if you could share with the audience every time somebody has a concern to which office in the city they could present their concerns, so then it's not all the time comes back to us, since it's just a waste of their time and our time listening to something that you have no power to change. But if they are directed to a place in the city where they can present their concerns, and maybe eventually more people complaining, and the mayor may decide to do a study or whatever, so that would be a more helpful and proactive way to deal with that.
Thank you. All city commission meetings have an open forum where residents can come and speak their mind on any timely issue or matter, and the policymakers are probably the ears you want to get on this matter. That open forum at the City Commission is called the Sutnick Hour. I believe it typically occurs twice a day in the City Commission meetings, in the morning and then an afternoon session. And that's where residents can come and, again, introduce themselves and speak your mind, and you get the ear of the policymakers then and there. This board has reviewed probably 60, 70 of these antenna systems throughout the city, so they're pretty even-handed at reviewing it and knowing when aesthetically it's in the inappropriate location due to blocking of certain vistas or camouflaging of architectural features that may be unique on a building. But again, they've been instructed from our city attorney's office to not begin to weigh upon the merits of, you know, the health or the environmental concerns.
But having said that, I think, you know, what we've been advised, this is a federal ruling. So whatever measures you can take to bring these concerns to the larger government is, I think, valid. There is one of our board members that's always been against these antennas and for the radio frequencies. But, you know, we may be saying the same thing about use of cell phones. So, but it's just something that is not within our jurisdiction. You know, we just see how they fits within the urban environment, and that's what we approve.
The last thing I would add is that the city has actually taken, at the direction of the city commission, a leadership role in trying to, you know, advocate for home rule and for local government's authority to exercise more control in this realm. And we're, the commission gave us direction to join in litigation filed by, I believe it was the Florida League of Cities. So, you know, we're the commission's directed us to do what we can. We've transmitted resolutions to the state legislature advocating for more local control, because right now our control is our authority is limited.
So, Jim, to pick back up, and the discussion was to perhaps begin to move a few of these items that were in a location that did not receive any contrary opinion from staff, from the board, or from neighbors that have received notice. I believe the only one that did was this last one that we encountered, and that's DRB 19-0478. And also the one on DRB 19-04, I'm getting that. Yes, that's correct. 0473-601 West Avenue. So those were the two that had concern from residents. If you'd like, I could read into the record the ones that did not, if you'd like to move on those. That would be the first one we heard, which was DRB 19-0472. 1226 12th Street.
I move to approve.
I have a question on that one. Is that possible to move that to the west, onto West Avenue?
The one on West Avenue?
No, this one's on
which one are you talking
12th
about?
Street. The first one. To the west side of West Avenue.
Plans for that one. I mean, the problem is power, and
those light poles going up and down West Avenue.
No, I know, but not all of them.
On the west side of West Avenue, is that residential also?
Wait, if you're going to speak,
is.
We got to have you on microphone.
Yeah,
it is, but they have large setbacks on the west side of West Avenue, so it would be much further away from any kind of building.
We'd have to see the power route, because the problem is it could. It's a power route, and then it could end up being a really far. It can be a huge distance to bring power to it, and then that will be a much complicated construction.
But if there's a power pole, it has power.
But not all of. But just because the pole's there, the power route. I mean, he's not allowed to talk, but he's my power guy. Yeah, it's okay.
So you could look and see if it's possible to move that to the west.
I can definitely look into it. Yeah, I can look into it. But I will let you know if. There's a reason why we pick one side of the street over another, because we want to be closest to the power, or else it's really hard to build it, and then we have to tear everything up, and it just makes it a lot more complicated. Some of these sites we can build in
or if you could move it to the east, mm-hmm. where it's closer to commercial stuff as opposed to residential stuff.
I know that residential is the last place we look. I promise you that, but, I mean, I could look into it for sure.
Because this one is right up against a building. So if we can move it to somewhere where it's commercial or somewhere where the setbacks of the buildings are greater.
Talk about 335. He's talking about 0472, the first item.
1226 12th Street.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, do you have the drawing for that one or no? 335?
So east or west?
Okay, how do I get back to you on that one? We just
talk to staff.
Okay. Let me see if that's possible. I'll tell them what the issues are with moving it east or west or keeping it there.
No, doesn't appear to be any existing overhead utilities. Overhead light poles once we pass the alley entering into the commercial district. On either side, and on the one side, we begin to have
proximity to a university and school, which I know previous applicants have avoided being adjacent to.
That's headed east. We're talking about headed west to West Avenue.
Or even south, because the parking garage only has a residential across the front of it. Yeah.
So is this a move to continue to let them study this?
Well, I think they can study it, and if they can move it, they should move it if they can. I think you can deal with staff on that issue.
I mean, I know that when we met, James, when we did meet with staff early on, some of these we had only one location that we could even go on at all. Like, it was really hard to even get it to the one pole, because we started off, all these locations were different from what we wanted, and we already moved them. I don't know how you want to go about that, but I don't know that there's...
Well, I think if you move it south, adjacent to the parking garage, and you just put up a pole without a light on it.
Well, we're not allowed to do a new pole. It has to be a replacement. No?
You can do a new pole.
Can we do a new pole?
We do new poles all the time.
Oh, okay. I thought we had to replace. Because the problem is also we have to, because of the equipment and everything, I thought we had to do, I mean, you tell me. I thought that we were supposed to replace and not add.
Ideally, you are not.
Okay.
You're doing what we want you to do.
Right.
If we want to do any of these applications.
Right.
Replacing the existing streetlight with an integrated system. Mr. Stephan's concern is that you are proximate to a hotel,
mm-hmm.
And that further down the corner, westward, at the corner of 12th and West Avenue, there's also a Cobra headlight that would benefit from the front setback of 20 feet. So,
or even if they move to the south across the street, that's the parking garage.
How far is that?
Have to continue, because I would need to see a survey of that if the sidewalk can accommodate it. I can't just blindly approve
and
a freestanding pole.
And then I also have to make sure that if it's too far, then that's going to be
right.
Because with the small cells, they can't be moved more than like 50 feet sometimes, because then the whole purpose is...
You know, we have approved a tangible alternate location. In this instance, I have a street light identified at the corner of 12th and West. That would be a preferred location. If you cannot, then the proposed location is approved. Okay. Cheryl, did you understand that?
Yeah, I will confirm that, and I'll let you know.
Now
that
is
we can
the time
move
to
it?
Confirm, because you're being conditioned.
I have to confirm if we can.
So.
That's how far? We have to know the distance and everything.
It's
Talk to me.
It's probably about 150 feet away, considering it's the length of a block. Or you can continue this item to next month.
Is there an issue? Oh, you said...
That was actually an initial candidate before we moved. That's why you see it says H after each of our sites. That means H is what A, B, C, D, F, G. It's like number 10 that we've already moved the poll. Rich said that was a candidate previously, and it didn't work out because we couldn't bring power to the site.
Okay, so the proposal is where it's at, Mr. Stephens. They did seek.
We did. That was one of the ones that we seeked
and
out already.
If they want to move it across the street,
and
we
come
need
back.
To come back.
Yeah, with new materials.
Well, I'll leave that up to the motion maker.
This is a 9th site that we moved it to. In this ring. This is the 9th pole that we, not with the city directly, but with...
But you were looking for poles. And if
or
you can do
or,
it,
or
you,
spaces, yeah, or new,
if you
we're
do
looking
it without
for poles to replace.
Replacing a light pole across just to the south, then that's an option.
Yeah, we were trying not to add more poles in the city. That was the goal. But also, we have to be close to the power, or
right.
it's
but
a
that's just
it's
going
really
across
difficult
the street.
Build. Yeah, but this is like...
I don't think this is necessarily the place to for the applicant to.
Yeah.
There's a foliage issue across the street with trees, yep. And that was an issue across the street.
So do you want to continue this one for an alternate location, or is any board member comfortable with making a motion?
I mean, I would move to approve the three that are without any controversy and to continue the three so exploration can be made regarding potentially alternate locations.
Okay, so
picking that up, Cheryl, we're going to move to another board members. DRB 19-0473, which was 601 West Avenue. Can I have a motion to continue that?
I so move.
So, sir, that's being continued to a future meeting date. Cheryl, you understand that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, do you
understand.
Do you oppose the would you consent to the continuance?
If I don't consent, then they're just going to deny it? Is that how that works?
I think the board's inclined to continue if the applicant would work with.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
So that's going to be to the April 4th hearing, just so that we have enough
We're continuing on the basis of what reason?
The board is asking you to continue it based on...
Is there a design? Is there another specific issue so I can go back and make sure we don't have the same issue when we redo the whole... You know what I mean? Like,
it's a good question.
Yeah.
So the
proximity to residential.
This one's across the street. This is on the east side of West Avenue, right?
On the vacant site soon to be developed with the park and the tower project.
Yeah, and that's even further away from residential.
So I can answer questions. We're not going back and
we can't do a back and forth. I do think, though, that the board should articulate a reason for the continuance within its authority.
So, Cheryl, we can't do a one-month continuance because you wouldn't be able to turn around and submit revised plans by then.
It's not just revised plans. We need, it's a lot of due diligence.
That's why I'm saying you can't. Having experienced this with other applicants, so that's why I would suggest the March or the April hearing.
And that's for the West Avenue?
That's for 473. Yes.
Okay. Wait, you mean, 47, DRB 473, okay.
I suppose it would also pertain to 472 since you didn't get an approval
this
for that.
This one, too, on West Avenue, because of that new construction that was going in, this was the only, I can say now, this was the only location that we could do on that whole area because of that development that is, that whole construction, and a lot of it was private property over there.
Mm-hmm.
This was the only right-of-way that we can go to. We moved this site already before. I mean, is there any way they can approve this location? I don't know that there's an alternative here at all in this search ring because these small cells only give a radius of about 500 feet. So, I mean, they also connect to the macro sites. So, I mean, it's a very limited radius of where we can put them. And when I know, like, for some of these candidates, like this one, on West Avenue H, that's the ninth candidate that we moved it to. That's the ninth time we moved it. So, I mean, if you can reconsider that, please.
In this particular location, since we have a project already approved that's going to be built there, I don't know if anybody had studied the location of the specific light pole in relation to what's going to be built next. Has it been analyzed in that way as well?
I glanced at the site plan that was approved, and again, because this is on private property,
right,
and is not near public vistas in terms of the city park, the proposed city park.
Right.
It
will not conflict with
not
what's
conflict.
Going to be built there.
Okay. I think I have a motion pending.
Your motion is to continue this one, I believe, correct?
Yeah. I'm not hearing, I'm not hearing a definitive, this is something that we've studied, and I can tell you with absolute certainty that this is the only place that light pole can go. So, I would
second that motion, and the guidance I would give the applicant is to study if there's a way to coordinate with the proposed project on the east side of West Avenue, a new location.
We did that. We did.
Okay, I think the board is the board's now deliberating.
Yeah, that's what we did that initially.
Either a March 3rd or April 7th. So,
about...
Yeah, so that's... I think Marsh seconded it.
I seconded that.
So that continues to the March 3rd hearing?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
And it was a second by Marsh. Marsh, Cricklin, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So, Charles will need revised drawings. That's basically...
That's for March 3rd. Okay.
That's one.
That's 0473.
Okay, we have DRB file 19-0475. This is the one located at 1236 13th Street, which we clarified the inaccuracy shown on some of their drawings. This is a one-to-one replacement at the corner of 13th and West, the light pole.
I move to approve with the condition that it remain in the same place as the existing light pole.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Sam. All in favor?
Aye.
This application is approved.
No.
No? Oh, you voted no.
I voted no.
Any opposed? No names or seconds. Okay. The next one is DRB file 19.
DRB file 19-0476, 1230 14th Court. Again, a one-for-one replacement.
Can that one move east? Or southeast? If it moves across the alley, it's in a commercial area. Just to the east. But then you'd have to look and see if they could put a freestanding pole at that location.
That's correct. Then we'd need new materials. This one is adjacent to the surface parking lot for the residential building, proximate to the alley and proximate to the commercial surface parking lot, understanding that those can all be redeveloped. But it is not in direct alignment with the residential building.
Okay.
Okay, so this one... Per the survey across the street, you're suggesting?
Either to the east across the alley or to the southeast.
There's overhead power there. There's overhead power. We can't.
But you can move it.
Can't be near that.
Further east.
How many feet is that?
But that would need to be resubmitted.
I don't know if you can see on your, if you have the map open, but there's a street light southeast that we could possibly.
That's closer to a residential building.
That southeast is commercial. Looks like the foxhole.
The what?
How many feet is that bridge?
If you can identify an existing light pole there, that would be great. I'm a little worried about the size of that sidewalk width, remembering that these are a little bit wider than the existing foot of the pole, and typically we can confirm when we look at the survey. That looks like a narrow sidewalk.
Should we continue to see what they can come up with?
That's 7-1 where it's at.
That's too tight.
Yeah, that's going to be...
That sidewalk. Right.
Yeah.
Show me that again, please.
Okay, yeah, he said it won't... I don't think that's going to meet ADA requirements. It's not. He was already out there on that one, too.
I think in this instance, the proposed location may be the best for this cross street.
And this one was also the eighth location, seventh location that we had chosen based on meeting all the requirements in that area.
I move to approve this one as proposed.
Is there a second?
Which application?
76.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, all approved, 6-0. Moving on to DRB file 19-0477. This is 1220 Lincoln Road. This is in a commercial district. We did not hear any direct opposition, and staff is supportive of the one-for-one replacement.
I move to approve.
We have a motion by Sam. All in, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Marsh. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then we have the one that had quite a few neighbor concerns, DRB 19-0478. Would this board like to continue this one also to the March 3rd hearing?
Yeah, motion to continue to March.
So you're going to be able to find an alternate location if none? Okay.
Yeah, of
We have a motion to continue by Sam. Is there a second?
Second.
Which one is this?
Second by Elizabeth. This is
1343 Lincoln Road.
43. Yeah, I just wanted to ask a question on this. This is a block away from the other one that you're proposing on Lincoln Road?
We have a macro site down on Lincoln Road, and these are, again, they're this is data. 5G is a data booster. So there are some of the sites are closer to each other than others. Some, you know, there's some of the gaps. There's more people there. There's more action there. There's more devices there. So there's a higher need for gaps. There's more of a need for speed. That's just how it works. But we're going to move this one, so I'll let them know if we can move it farther from the other proposed site. We're going to do that. Yeah, of course. I mean, it's not, you know.
So, again, reach out to my staff tomorrow to get a date when we need these.
Yes.
If we don't receive it by that date, we will continue it, and we'll let the concerned residents know that so they don't clear their schedules. But right now, guys, from the Bayview and environs, it's tentatively scheduled for the March 3rd hearing. Okay? Great. And so without further clarification from Mr. Steffens, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that one is approved, 6-0. We're going to switch back to the first one, which is 19-0472. This is 1226 12th Street. We had a few discussions with the board. We were unable to reach consensus on this one. Staff is supporting it. There was concern about potentially relocating this by some board members. Want to continue this one?
Move to continue.
Also to the March 3rd?
Yes.
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, and that one we'll see you again in March.
Excuse me, great.
March 3rd.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, board members. To finish up, I need a motion to adjourn in a second.
I so move.
Second.
And thank you very much. I will keep all potential reappointments and new appointments abreast of any information I receive. In the meantime, if you can still hold for a potential return, Elizabeth and Annabelle, for the February hearing. It would be greatly appreciated. Marsh, that pertains to you as well. I hope you got your reappointment stuff down to the clerk's office and have made your rounds with our policymakers. And with that, thank you very much.